Welcome once again to Leto's Law. Here's Steve Leto.
Right to repair has been in the news a lot lately, the last few years. And the idea of right to repair is that if you buy a product, complex product like a car or a tractor, and something goes wrong with it, under warranty, you know, you take it back to the dealership and they work on it. But if you buy something that's out of warranty, or if you simply decide to work on it yourself, can you without running afoul of the company that manufactured the product? And so there are companies out there that will tell you that inside or outside of warranty, doesn't matter. If you do anything, say for instance, messing with the onboard computer or something, it's going to void the warranty and they're going to, you know, not help you with that. And so some people have pointed out that the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act requires manufacturers to let you, generally speaking, work on your own stuff, and they cannot require you to buy their products to fix the product unless they can prove that their product is somehow needed. I'll give you an example. A car company cannot make you buy their oil filters, okay? So you get an oil change done, you don't need to buy an oil filter manufactured by the manufacturer who built your car. And that's complete sense. Now, the problem, of course, is that there could be something about a car that has some internal part that's only made to a certain specification by the manufacturer, and they can require you to use that without, you know, if you want to do something to not void the warranty. But they've got to prove their case to the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, that oversees this stuff. So right to repair is the idea that you as a consumer should have the right to work on and repair your own stuff without having to go to the manufacturer repeatedly or to have them do the work for you or to have them give you an authorized repair facility to do the work at. And so this has been a hot topic the last few years. It's popped up mostly, believe it or not, in the field of farm equipment. John Deere is famous for saying that their stuff can only be worked on by their people. And so if you get under the hood of your tractor and do work on it yourself, you might run afoul of things. If you bring that thing into a dealership and say, I want work done, they're going to say, well, you know, you've already messed it up, so we're not going to work on that for you. So Massachusetts recently, very recently, passed a law saying that the state will honor right to repair, right to repair. So in Massachusetts, you're going to be allowed to work on your own stuff, and the manufacturers will have to cooperate on some level to let that happen. So as you might imagine, this didn't go over well with some, let's say, organizations. And from Reuters, Auto Group sues to block Massachusetts Vehicle Data Initiative. Auto Group is suing to block right to repair. Again, David Shepherdson and Tina Bellin wrote the article for Reuters. And a group representing General Motors, Toyota, Volkswagen, and other automakers filed suits to block a Massachusetts state ballot initiative that seeks to dramatically expand access to vehicle data. And a lot of these issues no longer revolve around simple mechanical parts. Now they revolve around the onboard electronics stuff. Earlier this month, voters in Massachusetts overwhelmingly approved an initiative to revise the state's 2013 Right to Repair Law to require automakers to provide expanded access to mechanical and electronic repair data and allow independent shops to repair increasingly sophisticated technology. And, you know, most people, even who aren't gearheads, as we say, know that over the last 20, 30 years, cars have gotten more sophisticated. And there was a time when it seemed like magic that a mechanic could come out and plug something into your car and then say, oh, here's the problem with your car. In fact, I had a car in the late 80s that was not that sophisticated, but it had a check engine light on it. And there was a way to cycle the key, and then the check engine light would, in essence, flash not Morse code at you, but it would flash a series of flashes, and you'd write them down. And you say, okay, it flashed three times, paused, then four times. You look up on a thing what 34 was, and it would tell you, oh, that's the oxygen sensor, or something of that nature. So the technology's been getting smarter along the way. And of course, now we've got the onboard diagnostic readers where you can actually take a thing and plug it in to a port, download all kinds of information. That's now primitive compared to the stuff they've got on board cars. And so the question is it really something that the manufacturers can keep themselves and keep proprietary? Because you own the car. Now, they've been making the argument lately that much like your cell phone, you might own the phone, but you don't own the programs on it. You're basically using the programs, and you've been licensed to use those apps, but you don't own them. And so now the car companies and the tractor companies are saying, well, you might buy the piece of equipment, but the software on board we own, and we simply license it to you, and therefore going in and messing with that is something that we don't have to allow you to do. And so that's really where a lot of this is coming down to. The Alliance for Automotive Innovation trade group said if the law takes effect, years of manufacturers' work and billions of dollars in investment to protect and secure vehicle data will effectively be obliterated. But notice the name of the group is the Alliance for Automotive Innovation. It's a trade group. It's a lobbying group. The court battle may help determine who will control the $390 billion U.S. auto data aftermarket in the digital age. The auto group asked a U.S. district court judge in Boston to block the law, which is set to take effect in the 2022 model year. The Massachusetts Attorney General's office declined to comment. And, you know, this is one of those things. This fight's been raging for years. So somebody puts it on the ballot, and it turns out it's got overwhelming support. So now they run to court and see if they can't get the law thrown out. Unprecedented advancements in modern vehicles and crash avoidance systems have prompted many automakers to limit information and warranties to only parts and repairs from authorized dealers to ensure safety and privacy. And the warranty repairs, most people understand. I completely understand that if I buy a Ford Motor Company product and it needs to have warranty repairs, I take it to a Ford dealer. That makes complete sense to me. Number one, I knew that going in. Number two, other dealers wouldn't have the ability that a Ford dealer would have, especially with access to all the information that Ford dealers have from working on so many Ford vehicles. So, of course, and of course, Ford Motor Company has got to deal with that dealership on how much they pay for repairs, and the dealership's agreed to it. No problem there. But the idea that when it comes to non-warranty repairs, that's the issue. The companies argue that data is complex and sensitive, and that using contents to repair modern cars requires extensive training by those with proprietary technology. And of course, that's what we're talking about on one hand, is the technology. Do you have a special device that reads those codes? And I seem to recall a time when OBD readers were not as widely available as they are now. People who watch my channel regularly know that not too long ago, a guy out, I believe in California, who was some kind of social media guru type of guy, asked me, since I'm such an influencer, if I would get this device and plug it into my phone and use it to read the stuff off my car and talk about it on my show. And I said no, but he sent it to me anyways. I never used it. But the point is that now these things are so common that they're giving them away, and you can basically use your phone with one small attachment and make this thing work. And so there was a time, though, when they were making the argument, oh, no, no, this OBD stuff, this is all over the heads of the average person. It's all. Henry Ford spinning in his grave right now, by the way. Henry Ford wanted his cars to be something that the average guy or gal who worked on a farm and had fixed tractors could pop the hood and fix also without specialized training. But I understand, cars have come a long way in the last 100 and so some odd years. Independent repair groups have rebuked those restrictions as an attempt to seize control of the lucrative repair market and a way to force consumers into more expensive manufacturer-affiliated dealer shops. They're also concerned by automakers increasingly pushing for wireless repair data transfers, which will limit third-party access. The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, or NHTSA as we call it, said in July the measure requires vehicle manufacturers to redesign their vehicles in a manner that necessarily introduces cybersecurity risks and to do so in a time frame that makes design, proof, and implementation of any meaningful countermeasure effectively impossible. So there's also that, and we're talking there about, you know, nowadays cars have all kinds of stuff they didn't have even 20, 30 years ago. And the idea, for instance, that they have fixes they can do to a car and push to the car over the air. I'd love to go back and talk to myself in 1980 and say, hey, Steve, someday you're going to be talking to people about repairs being pushed to your car over the air. What do you think that means? And I was a relatively smart kid in 1980. I'd be going, what are you talking about, dude? Future Steve, get away from me. And it's not just that. I mean, you know, there was a string of, and I might do a story on this too, but there's a string of auto thefts in Western Michigan recently that they think somebody had built a booster hacker thing that allows them to walk near a car, and if the key fob is in the general area, it would range extend that and allow them to get into the car. And that kind of technology, again, 1980, you'd be going, they do what now with what? Tell me more about the cell phone of which you're speaking. So I understand it's not a simple, bright line issue. There probably are things that if you said, okay, we're going to allow other people to work on these cars, the first thing that happens, they're going to say, okay, you got to buy the equipment from the manufacturer because no one else makes it. And you know, how much is that going to cost you? And then if a third-party company says, no, we want to make the equipment that'll do that, we think we can do that, then you run into a problem where somebody using third-party equipment works in your car. They can't get it to work. You then take it to a dealer as a last resort, and they go, who messed up your car? Somebody messed up your car by hooking up something inappropriate in here, and that's a problem. And you're like, what? So these are all issues, but at the heart of it, the simplest part of this is, should you be allowed to work on your own car? Should you be allowed to choose who works in your car? Or should you be forced to take your vehicle back to the dealership for everything? For everything. And, you know, most people say, well, obviously not everything. You know, tires, batteries, oil filters, right? But then you start moving the line. Where does it stop? I can tell you that as I was doing research on this topic generally over the last few months, one of the problems I saw was there are guys and gals out west in particular who have large pieces of property they farm. And so they'll buy some very, very big and expensive farm equipment. And I'm here to tell you, in case you didn't know this, you think cars are expensive? Price out some tractors. Price out modern farm equipment and see what that stuff costs. That stuff is expensive. And so it's always been expensive, shockingly. And so farmers have a very, very difficult time because their overhead is so high. And they got to sink that in as an investment just to get the money back out. So if you're a farmer and you make some monstrous purchase of an expensive tractor, brand new, and you're out in the field using it and it breaks down. Now, in the old days, Henry Ford would say, roll up your sleeves and fix it yourself. Out in the field. Yeah. Have someone go back to the house and, you know, have your wife send out lunch. Or if you're a gal, have your husband send out lunch. Fix your tractor. You can't do that these days. You can't. So they'll fetch the tractor out of the field, take it back to the dealership, and the dealership's going to say, can't get to it right away. Got a whole bunch of tractors lined up ahead of you. We'll get to it when we get to it. And when people don't have their cars, it can inconvenience you. And if you literally can't get around without your car, you might lose work. You might have all kinds of problems. But a farmer who cannot run his tractor on a particular day might discover massive problems. Because if that's the day he's planting his stuff, that might be time sensitive. If that's the day he's harvesting his stuff, that might be time sensitive. And so it's more catastrophic sometimes for a farmer to have his big piece of equipment not available. And so there are people out there right now who will tell you that if you're running a small farm and you can, try to find the classic ones, tractors, that are before all of this stuff that can go wrong that you cannot fix yourself. And, you know, there are guys who always like the old school stuff because it's more fun to work on your own stuff. But there's also guys out there now apparently who are in the old school stuff because they can work on it as opposed to the stuff they bring back to the dealership. The guy goes, put it in line. We'll get to it when we get to it. And a farmer says, that's my livelihood. I can't afford to have the thing parked for that long. What can I tell you? There's 37 tractors ahead of you. And we've only got three guys here who are trained to use that one machine that'll diagnose this and tell us what's wrong with it. And guess what? When they get to their client and go, guess what? It was a sensor. We fixed it. You're good. Come get it. But it took us a while. So it's interesting. I'll be watching this closely because this is going to drag through the courts now. But it's something that a lot of people are interested in. So the auto group is suing to block Massachusetts' recent right to repair law, which was passed by a ballot initiative. And the story's from Reuters. David Shepherdson and Tina Bellin wrote it. Questions or comments, put them below. I'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Thank you for watching Leto's Law. Always be the first-rate version of yourself instead of a second-rate version of somebody else.